This is Matt Wells at UN News. At COP24, thousands gathered to find concrete ways to move forward on the historic Paris Agreement. Discussions were very much based on October's alarming report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, commissioned by the parties to the 2015 Paris Climate Deal, in which countries committed to do everything in their power to limit global warming to 2 degrees Celsius and even 1.5 degrees if possible. The report, produced by hundreds of scientists, said it wasn't impossible to cap global warming at 1.5 degrees Celsius, but that unprecedented changes in all aspects of society would be required. A strong effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, of course, but also active removal of CO2 from the atmosphere. Yasmina Guerra, who was in Katowice throughout for UN News, sat down with one of the leading scientists behind the report, Professor Diana Urge-Forsats.
The report had a massive, almost a landslide success in terms of the media coverage, but both in terms of being taken up by governments and decision makers. The key findings were, first of all, that half a degree matters. So it is really worth looking into this half a degree change between aiming at just capping warming at just 2 degrees versus 1.5 degrees. The second important finding was that right now, we are not yet committed to having 1.5 degree warming. So if, in theory, we stopped emitting any warming gases from tomorrow, the climate would not warm 1.5 degrees. However, clearly, we cannot do that. So the second question is, given this enormous rate of increase in our emissions, can we still reduce it in a way that we stop global warming at 1.5 degrees as compared to pre-industrial times? And the report doesn't give a yes or no answer. Instead, it decomposed this answer into 6 different components. First of all, it looked at geophysical feasibility. So whether from an Earth system perspective, can the warming still stop at 1.5 degrees? And there the answer was yes, that's still possible. The second was, can we technologically do it? Do we have the technologies to stop warming at 1.5 degrees? And there also the answer was yes. From a technological perspective, we don't have to wait for big new inventions or innovations to do it. We do have the technology. What's more, we can still choose. Not choose in terms of a silver bullet. There is no silver bullet. There's no one technology that will solve the climate problem. Instead, we probably have to use the entire portfolio of mitigation or emission reduction options that we have. However, there can be differences in terms of on which one a particular country or region puts the emphasis, whether on nuclear power, whether on renewables, whether on energy efficiency. There are still choices to be made. Now, the more difficult questions were related to the economic, the social, institutional, and environmental feasibility. These are all questions that, instead of answering with a yes or no, the report looked at enabling conditions and analyzed feasibility from a very complex perspective.
The report recommends reducing emissions, of course, but it also says that in order to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees, there might be something else that is required, and that might be carbon dioxide removal. That is, taking the carbon dioxide that is in the atmosphere and making it disappear somehow. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, absolutely. Now, if you look at the rate of emissions increases in the last couple of decades, even though in the last few years we have seen a very nice, almost plateau in the emissions, now they started to rise again. In this context, it's very difficult to foresee that we would suddenly go into deep dive or a free fall in terms of how we are reducing our global carbon dioxide emissions. So that's why we looked at what are our different options. And among the pathways that the IPCC looked at in this report, each of the pathways relied on carbon dioxide removal to some extent, which means that in order to stay at the temperature limit, we will have to try to take out carbon dioxide one way or another from the atmosphere. Now, it's important to emphasize that the different scenarios or different pathways relied on this method to different extents. There are some scenarios which assume a more or a less radical change in the present economic systems, so continuing the energy-intensive growth that we are doing, continuing to rely on high-carbon transportation fuels. This pathway definitely has to rely more on removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and storing it. So it's not only removing, but you also have to store it basically forever. As opposed to that, there are scenarios which said, let's look at, can we actually do it without that method? And they did find opportunities that it's still possible to reach scenarios that do not rely on certain ways, or more controversial ways of removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and storing it. But they also do rely on the natural ways of removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and storing it, most notably agriculture and forestry methods.
Some of those are the natural ways to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Is that already being done a lot? Can we do more? How much more do we need to do of it?
Exactly. Now, nature has given us the only really cost-effective and the best technology that presently removes carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and that's photosynthesis. So plants photosynthesize, which means they take carbon dioxide and solar energy, so the energy from the sun, together and produce their biomass from it. So they, in that way, take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and store it in their biomass. Now, in a natural way, after the end of their lives, they decompose and put that carbon dioxide back into the atmosphere. However, if we try to prevent that decomposition phase, then we have used vegetation to take that carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, and then if we can store it one way or another. There are different ways to store it. One way is what the report envisions to a very high degree, is burning this biomass. And what you burn, you result in carbon dioxide. You don't release it to the atmosphere, but you capture it and then store it forever. Now, the problem is that if you do that on a very large scale, then you do have to turn a lot of land into forest. And that comes with governance challenges. You can do it in sustainable ways, but most typically, if you really need to do it on a very large scale, you may use a lot of fertilizers to it, and you may use just monocultures, which are not that sustainable. However, presently, there are many other ways how natural ecosystems are taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. For example, soils. Soils have a lot of carbon. However, a lot of the recent large-scale agricultural practices, the result of which was that we lost the carbon content of the soil, we lost the organic content. So another very good way to sequester carbon is to allow soils again to accumulate organic material or accumulate carbon. So that can happen also through mostly natural methods, just conservation agriculture, which is anyway better for many other reasons. It also protects us better from the impact of climate change because it increases the water availability of the soil, for example.
There's also technological research on this matter. Is that something that the IPCC recommends we should move forward with? What are the ethical, the environmental, and the maybe political and legal ramifications of using high tech to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere?
Well, first of all, it's important to understand that the IPCC does not recommend anything. What we do is we look at the academic literature, the scientific literature, what has been published and peer-reviewed. So what we are trying to assess, what the scientists are saying, what science has seen. So certainly if there are technological developments, there will be scientific information on that, and we are assessing that. We are assessing not only the technological opportunities, but we are also assessing the risks and governance issues related to these, the costs, but also the benefits and the synergies with other development goals. Because clearly what's very important to see is that the IPCC is well aware that we have to solve the climate challenge in tandem with solving the development challenges. So all of our reports do come with a strong opening and a strong ending and bridging throughout the report, keeping the goals of development in sight. So having said that, yes, we have looked at different technologies to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Right now, at this point, they are still economically more expensive. For example, direct air capture. So we could not only use plants, but we could directly us through man-made technologies take the carbon dioxide out of the air and store it, similarly as we have been discussing. These are in the development right now. There are technologies for this and they are expensive. At this point, just capturing don't necessarily come with very high risks. Nevertheless, you always have to look at these risks and governance issues at scale. Because the problem is, really, depending on which pathway we choose, what we outlined, for example, in the 1.5-degree report, either the pathway where we don't significantly change how our economies work and how we live our lives and how we choose transport options, then there is very little other choice than deploying massively some form of carbon dioxide removal and storage. And we have seen it in history that whenever we have to do something at that scale, that will always come with some sort of risks. It is just like nutrition. Everything in small doses is almost a medicine, or, well, not anything, but most things that we eat. But if you eat too much from anything, it's going to be risky for you. The same in these technologies. If you have to deploy them at a planetary scale, then you are bound to have risks. Some of these risks can be managed by good governance, but you really do have to have a strong governance involved with some of them. But if you are using them only at a smaller scale, which is outlined in the scenarios, in the pathways, which rely heavily on demand-side measures, which means more business innovation, more social innovation, and not only technological innovation, it still allows substantial increase in well-being, especially in the Global South, also in the Global North, but mostly in the Global South. But it does involve a change in business models, for example, and how we go about economies. In these scenarios, however, we would not need to rely on these more controversial or more complex and not yet tested technologies, or technologies not yet tested at the scale that we are talking about deploying needs.
As a member of the scientific community here at the COP24, do you feel like decision makers and politicians are hearing the science and moving in the right direction?
Well, clearly that's a complex question because depending on which areas, I do think they are hearing, especially after our latest report. The 1.5-degree special report of the IPCC did get to the highest decision-making levels, and I'm seeing that being used even at municipal decision-makers and so on. However, we do need to understand that governments have to balance many, many goals, and climate change is just one of them. So it's when we think that they are not listening, then it might be that simply they also have other important interests that they have to listen to. So that's why it's very important that we look at, and that's what we really are trying to do in the IPCC, how you can go in tandem with these two, how to maximize the synergies with development goals. So this is why we put a strong emphasis also on the sustainable development goals, and which are the areas, which are the mitigation options that have strong synergies with SDGs. And we encourage decision makers to look at these chapters as well, where we look at the sustainable development implications and then look at their own choices. If we go down this route, then we are going to see more benefits for our development. If we go down these other routes, we will face much more risks, for example.